Well, brothers and sisters, normally we have a scripture reader here, but the scripture is going to get read anyway in the sermon, so we're just going to combine the two today, if that's all right with you. It's a good morning. It's been a beautiful weekend, beautiful weather. It's supposed to cool off a little bit this week. I know a lot of our students are out for spring break, so there's a kind of a spirit of excitement right now in the air. It's always a fun time in the city of Houston to be around going and doing whatever needs to be done because the weather's so great this time of year. So I'm hoping that in all of this, we're remembering who we belong to and how we are supposed to live our lives. And that's a little bit about what we're going to talk about this morning. The sermon is titled Handle with Care, and I did not do this on purpose. Last week, our sermon title was Caution Tripping Hazards, and now we have Handle with Care. And I didn't mean for us to go with a safety theme these last couple weeks, but it's happened that way. So now I'm thinking about next week's title, like, oh, how can I keep this going just for fun? I did work a little bit in safety some years back, so maybe I have some of those phrases rolling around in my head. So we'll see. We'll see what happens next week. But we're talking about handling with care this week, and actually we're talking about handling each other with care, how we deal with people. And so we're going to be in Matthew chapter 18. And that should be the only place we're going to be this morning is Matthew chapter 18. So if you got your Bibles, open them up there because we're going to journey our way through and look at some of these conversations Jesus was having with those around him in Matthew 18. And so we start off with the scripture that was going to be read this morning. It says, at that time, the disciples came to Jesus and asked, who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? He called a little child and had him stand among them and said, I tell you the truth, unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever humbles himself like this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And whoever welcomes a child, little child like this in my name welcomes me. But if anyone causes one of these little ones who believes in me to sin, it would be better for him to have a large millstone hung around his neck and to be drowned in the depths of the sea. The disciples come up to Jesus and they ask, who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? The Israelite, the Jews at that time, much like us today, we like to categorize, right? Who is the greatest? Who was the greatest king? Who was the greatest prophet? Obviously, Moses has to be at the top of that list. Well, we have Father Abraham. What about now? Those of us who are disciples, Jesus, who is the greatest? And we kind of do this sometimes out loud. We love to make lists of who the greatest basketball players of all time are. Who's the greatest rock and roll stars of all time? Who's the greatest Houston Texans quarterback there's ever been? That's a short list, but we try to do this, right? We want to categorize. And so we get this, right? Who's the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? And Jesus totally flips this on its head because he says, you're asking the wrong questions. Who's the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? That right there tells you, the fact that you ask that question, that you are concerned with that, you're in the wrong place, right? Your mind is in the wrong place. He calls a little child to them and says, I'm going to tell you the truth. Unless you change, because right now you're not where you're supposed to be. I want you to be like this child, and you're thinking about who's the greatest and wondering maybe if you're the greatest. This child is not thinking that. We live in a society much different from that time in how we treat children. Somewhere along the way, advertisers realize that children are very important tools to get into their parents' pocketbooks. And all the advertising started turning towards children, right? From the commercials and, everything that you see. If I can get a kid to start tugging on their pants of their parents and say, buy me that, there's a good chance I can get into that pocketbook. And somehow children in that way have kind of been lifted up and celebrate. Now, I shouldn't say celebrate. That's a good thing, obviously, to celebrate children. But a whole lot of importance has been placed on what children think. Right, a lot of studies and science and research has gone into that to try to get to the mind of the child, because if we can get there, maybe we can get to the parents. And because of that, we have a whole lot of attention given to children. A lot of it, rightfully so, of course. Jesus has taught us how important children are. But at that time, it wasn't that way. Children were, you know, when you were younger, you were just kind of a drain until you could start to actually work, right? Become useful with your hands. But children would, you know, the old adage, right? Children should be seen and not heard. That's not said much anymore these days, but that's even more recently in our own history. That's the thinking. And so a child in the time of Jesus would be understood as being very low on the totem pole. Right, not having much importance, not having a say in what's going to go on. And so Jesus takes this child and brings him into this midst, one that everyone would know that this child could definitely not be the greatest, right? And he says, unless you guys change and become like this little child, you're not even going to enter into the kingdom of heaven. You guys are looking at it wrong, because to want to know who the greatest is, or to be the greatest, means you are going to have to put others down, right? It means you're going to have to elevate yourself, oftentimes at the expense of others. And that's not how we're going to operate in this kingdom. In this kingdom, it's going to be the opposite. Verse 4, whoever humbles himself like this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. You don't need to be thinking about who's the greatest. You need to be thinking about who's the least. Who's going to lower themselves? Who's going to humble themselves? Who's going to be willing to give up their rights and their position and their power for the sake of others? That's how the mindset I want you guys to have. And I want us, as we go through the rest of Matthew 18, to keep that in mind. As we look at how we handle, how we operate, how we interact with others, having the mind of a child, right? Because as we, for example, get into looking after the lost sheep, I might look for something for a while, then give up. I may call someone on the phone or send them a text and they don't answer and I forget about it. But let a child misplace the favorite toy of theirs, or let them not know where their parents are, and watch them look and continue to look without giving up and being extremely concerned with something. Or as we look into the idea of someone who's done wrong towards you, a brother who has sinned against you, how quick many children are to forgive and to forget when they've been wronged, even by their own parents, how they'll let that go. Let's have the mind of children as we enter into this idea of how we should treat one another. And so we start with, how do we treat those that are lower, those that are more humble in a position in society? So go with me to verse 5 now. Jesus says, whoever welcomes a little child like this in my name welcomes me. Whoever welcomes a little child in my name. If a child is making too much noise, you need to get them out of here. They're not welcomed in this place. This child is a distraction. The adults are talking. Let the children be outside. The children are going to sit at their own table. That's oftentimes how we might treat children. It's definitely how children would have been treated at that time. And Jesus is saying the opposite. Welcome them in my name. Because when you welcome a child, you're welcoming me. And this idea continues on, not just to children, but to the least of these, right? Jesus said, for those, when you visit those in prison, you're visiting me. When you take care of those who do not have, you're taking care of me. This is how we should handle one another. This is how we should look after one another. This is how we should look after those that are considered least. Those who don't have rights. Those who don't have, they don't bring anything to the table. Jesus says, welcome them. Not because of what they have, not because of who they are, but because they're mine. That's how Jesus wants us to welcome them, because, and like we'll see in all of this, And all throughout Matthew 18, that's exactly how Jesus welcomes us. What do we bring to the table of God? What can I add that's going to benefit God? There's very little, if anything at all, other than my faith, right? Other than my love. But yet he welcomes me. He's not going to gain more strength, more power, anything like that from me, and yet he welcomes me. And that's the mindset he wants us to have. Whoever welcomes the least of these into my name welcomes me. And then the opposite of that, though, but if you cause one of these little ones to sin, if you are treating one of these little ones in such a way that causes them to neglect or to turn away from Jesus, from his teachings, if you're doing something that's putting one of these off, You would be better if you took a big old rock and tied it around your neck and were thrown out into the water. That would be better than to go against one of these little ones. Whose side is Jesus on? He's on the side of the least. That's whose side he's on. And when we mistreat those who society say are lower than us, start picking out what kind of rock you want to wear around your neck, because that's a better position for you. Think about that. When we treat those who don't bring anything to the table, when we mistreat those who the society says are least, we're mistreating Jesus. We're going against the King of Kings. That's not the position we want to be in. And Jesus is telling us this. You know, oftentimes as someone who gets up in front of others and speaks, you know, and this, of course, about the Bible, you want to bring some idea. You want to have people's, you know, light bulbs go off. You want to explain something that was difficult. You know, that's exciting. But then there's times when you have teachings that's it's just black and white. It's plain as day. But you know, often it's not being done. It's not being lived. And those aren't always the most exciting because, for one, you know, it's simple. You could read this on your own and totally understand it. You don't need me to tell you what's going on in Matthew chapter 18. But it's difficult because I'm not doing it. And many of us aren't doing it, right? The church often is not doing the simple things that Jesus said. And oftentimes these simple things, when we don't do them, have the largest consequences, like a millstone being hung around your neck to be thrown into the sea. But that's what Jesus is saying here, right? Those that you consider least, the one that some of you guys might be bothered that I'm actually bringing this child in here among us, you better treat this child and all children right. Yeah, they might get on your nerves. Yeah, they cost you money. Yeah, but you know what? If you don't treat them right, you're not treating me right. That's how you need to think in the kingdom now. It's different now than the way it used to be. Let's continue on through Matthew 18. Let's go down to verse 10. See that you do not look down on one of these little ones. Don't look down on them. Don't look at them as if they're beneath you, as if they're not as important as you are. Don't look at them that way. For I tell you that their angels in heaven always see the face of my Father in heaven. I tell you that their angels in heaven always see the face of my Father in heaven. This is the idea where that we have guardian angels, that children have guardian angels kind of come out of this verse. And that may or may not be true. I'm not totally sure. But what I do know, what I am sure about, is that Jesus cares about these children, right? He cares about these little ones. And so make sure that you care about them also. And here's how much he cares about them. And not only them, right? Not only these younger ones, but all of the least. Verse 12, if a man owns 100 sheep and one of them wanders away, will he not leave the 99 and go and look for the one that wandered off? Leave them on the hillside where they're safe and go off and look for that one that wandered away. And if he finds it, I tell you the truth, he's happier about that one sheep than about the 99 that did not wander off. Makes sense. They would get this as shepherds, right? The 99 are going to stay there. They're protected by just being together. They're okay. They're doing what they should do, but one wandered off. And that one is important. So important that he's willing to leave the 99 and go and find it. And when he finds it, he's extremely happy about it. You think, well, you had 99 over here. Yes, but the 99, that's what's supposed to be. That's how they are supposed to be. Everything is good here. This one I did not have, but now when I do have them, I'm extremely happy, right? Joyous. I'm celebrating. Well, that's the way that it is for our Father in heaven. Whenever there's a little one that's lost, and he's willing to go and do what's difficult to find that little one. This is how God operates. The difficult path that God chose to take to save all of us that were lost. The death of his son. That's the mindset of our God. That's the mindset of our King. And when we live in this kingdom, that needs to be our mindset as well. How important are those that are lost? They're so important that I'm willing to risk danger, that I'm willing to go out and leave behind whatever comfort I may have to seek them out. That's how important they are. I want to brag a little bit about my parents. I know some of you know this story. I've told it before. My I have an uncle who struggled in a lot of ways and had lost connection with my mom for a while. And she finally found out where he was, and he was in another city. And she went to go to him. He was in bad health. He was not a Christian, but she never gave up on him. And she went and brought him home to her house, right? Got out of the comfort zone of having, her space, her place, left her home, went to not a great place to bring him out of there, to bring him home. And through that process, although had tried many times before, somehow this extra journey, this extra bit of giving, my uncle came to believe in Jesus Christ and was baptized and, was brought, to good health and saved through that, through my mom not giving up on him. Even though he had hurt her many times, her mindset was love. Her mindset was compassion. Her mindset was, I'm willing to sacrifice things for him, and did so. And my father as well. And one that was lost came to be found. And there was much rejoicing in that. That's the mindset we have in this kingdom. There is no one that is not so important that we're not willing to leave to go find them. The problem is, church, I think oftentimes we're walking amongst the lost. We're not looking for anyone. We're not concerned. Someone may not be amongst our midst that we haven't seen for a while, and we don't think about it. We're so busy with everything else going on, we're not willing to become uncomfortable. Maybe I don't even think it's that. I think we would be willing. I think it's just not even on our mind. We're so distracted by our own lives, our own worlds, that these that are lost, these, whether they be the children or anything, they're more of a distraction than anything. And so we don't think about them. We don't consider them. That's not the mind of Jesus Christ. We're not thinking in the right way. We're worrying about what's greatest. Me and my world and my life is more important than the lost. I don't want to have to wear a millstone around my neck. Go down to verse 15. So we've talked about the children, right? Those that don't bring anything to the table and how we should handle them. They are important. Because they represent Jesus, right? When we do for them, we do for Jesus. We've talked about those that are lost and willing to go out and to find them. But what about those that aren't necessarily lost, but you got to rub against them? They've done something that bothers you. They have offended you. Verse 15, if your brother sins against you, and if you're in our class this morning, we're going to get a little bit of repetition here because we talked about this. If your brother sins against you, go to one of your best friends, tell them what that person did, and y'all talk about them and make jokes about that person. Talk about how they don't even know how to dress or conduct themselves. That's what you're supposed to do, right? And maybe get a couple other people on board to point out that person, they're not a part of your group anymore, right? That's the way we want to do things in this kingdom. Obviously, I'm being a little bit sarcastic here, or a lot sarcastic. That's not what Jesus says at all, right? If your brother sins against you, go and show him his fault. Go to him. Go to that person in love, because you actually care about that person, and let them know that they did something wrong. Let them apologize for it if they were wrong, right? Bring it to their attention. Don't hide it from them. Don't keep it from them. Don't tell others about it so you can talk about them. Don't do anything that's going to cause more separation. Even if they are wrong and you are totally in the right, and in your mind and in the teachings of our world, you have every right to say, I don't want anything to do with that person. Jesus says, throw that out the window. That's not how we operate in this kingdom. You swallow your pride. You get rid of your offense in a way, and you go to them and you bring it to their attention, and you trust that that person really wants to follow Jesus. And if they made a mistake, the right thing to do would be to bring it to their attention so that they can correct it, so that they can become more like Jesus, because you actually love that person more than you care about being offended. Some of us look for ways to be offended. We want to be offended. We're happy when we're offended, when we can talk about what people have done to us. Jesus Christ was willing to go to the cross for us. That's our mindset, right? I'm willing to humble myself for the benefit of others. So go to them, and if he listens to you, you have won your brother over. That's the goal. Win them over. Because out of love, right? That's the goal. Verse 16. But if he will not listen, take one or two others along with you so that every matter may be established by the testimony of two or three witnesses. Don't take a few more people to him so that y'all can gang up on him, but take two or three other people who know him, who love him, who agree, and y'all go together to lovingly confront this person to show them the error of their ways. Handle it with care. That's the way it's supposed to be done. Hopefully he listens. But verse 17, if he refuses to them, now you take it to the church. The problem is we often do this the other way, right? When we feel like we are wronged, we want to go talk about that person to others. And the problem never gets solved. And a wedge just keeps being driven and grows wider and wider. And that is the exact opposite of how we are supposed to operate in the kingdom, right? All of us mattered enough to Jesus Christ that he gave his life for us. We need to matter enough that much to each other as well. When I say that person does not matter to me, or I'm going to do things to create a barrier or allow a barrier to continue to exist, I'm saying that my opinion of that person is better, more accurate than Jesus Christ's opinion of that person. Jesus might be willing to die for that person, but I'm not willing to walk across the room to have a heart-to-heart conversation with them. That's the boat I'm putting myself in when I'm conducting myself that way. And I'm going to tell you guys, that boat's going down because there's a bunch of millstones sitting in that boat. So you don't want to be in that boat. Now go with me down to verse 21. Because Peter's hearing this, right? The apostles are hearing this talk that, hey, when someone does you wrong, go to them and make it right. Not when you did them wrong, right? Jesus talks about that in Matthew 5. If you do someone wrong, you're supposed to go to them also. But if someone does something wrong to you, you're supposed to go to them, right? You don't get to sit back and say, well, they did what's wrong. I'm going to sit and wait for them to come to me. Matthew chapter 5, Jesus said they're supposed to come to me. Yes, but he also says you go to them, right? Throw your rights out the window. Do what Jesus says to do. So Peter comes to Jesus in verse 21. He says, Lord, how many times shall I forgive my brother when he sins against me? All right, so he does me wrong. I'm supposed to go to him. How many times do I need to do this? Because, you know, there's some people, they mess up a lot, right? Do I keep on? How many times? Seven times? And Jesus says, no, not seven, Peter. 77. Or seven, sometimes it said 70 times seven, right? In other words, you keep on doing it, Peter. There's no number, right? And I don't care how many times he's done you wrong, you forgive him. You know, what if we had a number, right? What if the number was seven? Or seven times seven? Or 70 times, right? What if it was that many? Oh, I'm allowed to. I'm going to keep track. Okay. Hey, man, you only got seven more times. Oh, three more times you sin against me. I don't have to forgive you anymore. Oh, we finally reached the last one. I don't have to forgive you anymore. That's what it says here. What if we took that approach and found out later that that's the same approach God takes? And he says, you know, I gave you 70 times seven times. You kept messing up. You kept sinning against me. So, you know, your forgiveness, you ran it out. What if he had that approach? We'd be a lot more careful with what we did, wouldn't we? I hope, right? But we rely on God's forgiveness. We recognize the death of Jesus on the cross and the grace that it affords us. And we know that we have this eternal salvation, right? Unfortunately, we don't know it enough to, you know, sometimes we stay in our sin too much, right? We allow ourselves, we forgive ourselves so easily because of the death of Jesus, but the sins of others were not so easy to forgive, right? We hold those to people unfairly that we're not willing to hold to ourselves. Jesus says, not seven times, but 70 times, and he tells this parable. To me, one of the most difficult parables, because, you know, the ones that hit home are the most difficult. He says, the kingdom of heaven is like a king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. And as he began the settlement, a man who owed him 10,000 talents, right? Millions of dollars. He was brought to him. And since he was not able to pay, the money was just too much, right? The master ordered that he and his wife and children and all that he had be sold to repay the debt. Because that's what's fair. That's the law. That's how it works. You can't pay the debt. He's not being evil, right? He's not being a cruel master. That's just, I'm being a just, fair master because that's the rule. You owed me this money. You couldn't pay it. The law says we can sell at you and everything you have and all your family to help repay the debts. That's the law. Just following what's right. The servant fell on his knees before him. Be patient with me, he begged, and I'll pay back everything. The servant's master took pity on him, canceled the debt, and let him go. By law, I could have you locked up, but I'm going to have mercy on you. You don't owe me a thing. Wipe it clean. The servant went out, and he found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 denarii. 100 bucks, right? Not much at all. He grabbed him and began to choke him. Pay back what you owe me, he demanded. His fellow servant fell to his knees and begged him, be patient with me and I'll pay you back. I mean, the man was in his rights. He was owed money. The guy wasn't paying him money. I don't know if he was allowed to choke him, right? But maybe he had a right to go for the money. He was within his legal rights to try to get the money from this guy that owed him, even though he was just forgiven millions of dollars. His fellow servant begs him for money. Now get this. A minute ago, it was a king and a servant. And the king, who had every right in the world, lets the debt go. Now we have two fellow servants who are on an equal plane, right? One does not have any authority over the other. And he's owed money, and he begins to choke him, asking for the money back. When his fellow servant begs him to give him more time so he can pay him back, he refuses. Instead, he went off and had the man thrown into prison until he could pay the debt. That's how he responded to the small amount of money that was owed to him. When the other servants saw what had happened, they were greatly distressed. And this would be troubling, right? This would look ugly to you to see a person who was forgiven so much turn around and not have that same heart towards someone else on a much who owes them much less. But to treat them this harshly, this would be upsetting to you if you were to see this, right? So they go to the king. And they let him know what's going on. The master called the servant in and says, you wicked servant, he said, I canceled all that debt of yours because you begged me to. Shouldn't you have had mercy on your fellow servant just as I had on you? And in anger, his master turned him over to the jailers to be tortured until he should pay back all he owed. It's ugly when we don't forgive one another. When we hold things against one another, when I'm not willing to come to you and say, hey, just so you know what you did there, I don't think that was right. And I'm not telling you so much because it hurts my feelings, but because I want you to be in a good place with Jesus, right? I want you to look more like Christ. And I hope that if I do something, you come and tell me because I want to be like Jesus. Let's hold each other accountable. Let's lift each other up. Let's spur one another on. Let's have that relationship. That's what we should do. But instead, when I talk about you behind your back, when I don't forgive you, when I hold grudges against you, and I keep you at arm's length because of what you have said or done, that is ugly. And it looks ugly not only to other Christians, but it looks ugly to people outside the church. And it hurts the name of Jesus Christ. And it causes people to not want to be a part of this kingdom when the members of the kingdom, the citizens of the kingdom, don't follow the rules of the kingdom and don't live like the king. It's ugly and it hurts. It hurts the witness. Our witness is what it does. And how will we be treated when we live this way? Well, he already said you're going to have a millstone tied around your neck, thrown into the water. That would be better for you. If that were to happen, he says here, he makes in this story, thrown into jail to be tortured until he can pay back all that he owes. He owes over $1 million. He's sweating a guy over 100. I don't think he's paying back the million anytime soon. That's the treatment you're going to get, right? When you live this way. Look at verse 35. One of the most straightforward verses in the Bible. That's also one of the most harsh, if you will, if you're in the wrong. Verse 35, "This is how my heavenly Father will treat each of you unless you forgive your brother from your heart." And I know that this verse has come up multiple times in the sermons that I teach because I think it's so important. There it is, right? How do we handle each other? How do we treat one another? It doesn't matter what my status is. It doesn't matter what my bank account is. It doesn't matter how I dress. These things don't matter. They're not important, right? Jesus died for me in spite of these things, right? I should not treat you differently based on those things. What you can offer me has no bearing on how I approach you and how I treat you. It shouldn't anyway. Because I want to treat you the way Jesus treats you, the way Jesus treated me. That's how I want to treat you. I want to treat you out of love. I want to treat you like Jesus simply because you matter to Christ, so therefore you obviously are important. That is more important than whatever else you may offer me, right? Whatever I can gain from my relationship with you pales in comparison to the simple fact that you matter to Jesus. So therefore, you should matter to me. And when you do something, when I haven't seen you in a while, when you've gone away, when you've made mistakes, when you've made bad choices, I want to go after you because Jesus died for you. I want to leave behind whatever it is in my life to make sure you get back to being right with Christ, that you get back into a relationship with Jesus. That needs to be my mindset. And as I sit up here and say that, I'm not saying that I do that. I'm saying I need to do that. I want to do that. I want to live and obey Jesus in his teachings. And when you do something that offends me, I mean, really, why should I even be offended? I should have the mind of a child, right? I should have a mind that I'm really not that important, Joseph. If they did something that offended you, it's not rocking the world, you know? Whatever you think of yourself really isn't important as much as the fact that you are important to Jesus, right? And if I'm going to understand the sacrifice Jesus made for me, then I'm willing to let go of all of these temporary titles and crowns that I'm trying to hold on to so that you and I can operate in love, because that's how we live in this kingdom, where our King loves us. Our King treated us, even though we were like children, good, better than we deserved, and put us in an important position. That even when we went wrong and we were lost, he left the comforts of his place to come out and find us. And that even though we continuously do things that go against what he wants and what he's about and are offensive to him, he continuously brings us back in, corrects us, disciplines us out of love when we need it, so that he can be in that relationship with us because we are important to him. That is our example. That is our model. The relationships that you have with people that you know, the relationships you have with people that you don't know, need to be handled with care. They are important. So let's follow in the examples of Jesus and live that way for one another. If you want to give your life to Jesus Christ this morning, if you have not been baptized, you have that opportunity this morning. We can baptize you in the water here and you can enter into the kingdom. You can follow in the footsteps of Jesus. You can live the way he wants you to live, knowing that you are saved. And there's a hope of resurrection. If you need the prayers of this congregation, if you want to place membership with us, we offer you that opportunity now as we stand and sing.